Hello, everybody. This is Daniel from EmergencyActionPlanning.com, and today's interview is with Lori Eklund Long from MyLifeInABox.com. Keep in mind, we will have additional contact information at the end of the interview. Now, I've asked Lori to talk to us today on the subject of preparing documents prior to disasters and emergency situations. Now, Lori has a wealth of experience. She has 9 years as an author and a national speaker. She provides a wealth of information relating to surviving natural disasters, terminal illness, family loss, and elder issues. She holds a bachelor's degree in marketing and has worked for 27 years as director of sales and marketing for a California-based company. Now, along with her publications, such as the book My Life in a Box, Lori offers workshops providing emergency preparedness planning that allows people to leave their homes in 5 minutes with everything they need to rebuild their lives. Very crucial, everything you need to rebuild your life. Now, Lori is here today to discuss documents and how they fit into the overall disaster emergency preparedness planning process. So, Lori, how are you doing today?
Great, Daniel. I'm pleasure being with you today.
Well, thank you very much. I take that as a compliment. Now, I know that we learn things through the course of our lives, and this particular niche subject of yours isn't something that just came to you, it sprung up at you. So I'm thinking that at some point in time, something had to happen that made you decide that this is something you needed or wanted to focus on and get that information out to the public. So what was that that brought you to that decision?
Actually, I had a very normal life and had 2 children and married, had a job. Everything was going great, but then in my mid-40s, I started losing family members, and basically lost 12 family members and several close friends in a period of 5 years.
Ooh.
And it was tough. It was, I remember my son coming in one day, and my kids were in high school, and they said, "Is this normal?" And I said, "I don't think so." The hard part wasn't just dealing with the grief of the loss, but working on looking for all the documents when someone passes away. And we were just going nuts trying to find all the documents. And at one point, the pastor of my church called me up, and he said, "Are you keeping notes?" And I said, "Yeah, actually I am, because we've been in Fresno, California for 5 generations, and people would start calling me and say, 'How did you deal with this, and what happened here?'" And so I put together a workbook, and it was called The Next 48 Hours, and it basically dealt with how to deal with all the logistics around losing a family member. And so that was how it got started. But then when Hurricane Katrina hit, and actually 9/11, Hurricane Katrina, the tsunami in Indonesia, I started realizing that people anywhere in the world that go through any kind of trauma, disaster, or emergency have to be able to prove who they are and what they own. And
right.
That started My Life in a Box.
So that's where you started working on that whole process of
right.
deciding what needs to be collected, how it needs to collect it, and
yeah, when and the big deal is when you're not under stress is when you want to start doing it.
Correct.
Not when there's an emergency.
That's a little too late then, right?
It's too late, because then you're dealing with grief and shock, and you're running around like a chicken with your head cut off trying to find stuff, and your body just doesn't want you to do it.
Right. Okay, so we can look at what you're getting at here is that there are certain types of scenarios where you need to come to grips with having all this information. Can
right.
you break those down? Are they categorized in one way, shape, or form so people could put a handle on those?
The biggest one is emergencies and natural disasters, things that catch you off guard, that you really, like I said, you don't have time to think. You just go into survival mode, and you have to grab and run.
Mm-hmm.
Or if there's a car accident or a family accident, you have to know where the documents are immediately.
Right. But I know that you've mentioned that majority of the people tend to wait until the last minute, you know, hoping that it's not going to happen to them.
Yep.
But there's some, in reading through your book, My Life in a Box, I noticed that you pick on one subject. Well, actually, you cover multiple subjects, but there's one particular subject which, as I was going through it and looking at your checklist and the documents that needed to be filled out, you know, it brought stuff back to me from my military experience. You know,
right.
we have to prepare for these things prior to the fact. And these are things that people don't want to deal with a lot. Can you expand on that one subject a little more and why it's important for people to be in grips with
those? We are procrastinators. You know, and I love telling people, I'm not Chicken Little, and I'm not going around telling everyone that the sky is falling. I have a good life. But what I've realized is that it's really easy for people to turn on the television and watch all of the hurricanes and now the tornadoes in the Midwest and say, oh, those poor people, that will never happen to me. We really don't want to believe that it will happen, and yet my experience shows that sometime in everyone's life, you're going to either face a natural disaster, a house fire, or a personal family emergency. And so why not get prepared when everything's okay? When the sun's shining, the birds are singing, let's get prepared.
That makes total sense to me, but that's being proactive as opposed to reactive, right?
Absolutely.
Okay, now, we both know that, you know, there's organizations out there that really push the proactiveness as much as they can. I'm talking about FEMA, the American Red Cross, Salvation Army, your local offices of emergency management. But, you know, when we think of those organizations or those groups, you know, what comes to my mind is, okay, have the food, have the water, know where you're evacuating to.
Right.
And they very rarely touch, even though they might mention, on the subject of document preparation. So what is the difference between my life in a box and FEMA or the American Red Cross?
I focus on specific document preservation. I have located things on FEMA and the Red Cross sites that say plan your documents, get your documents together. There are several people on television that have kits that teach you how to do this. But in my life in a box, it is the most simple way of doing it. You take one page in the book, you get a box, and you go through your house, and you basically go on a scavenger hunt through your home looking for all your documents.
Now, you mentioned scavenger hunt, and you must, I mean, you're probably a lot like me. I've got documents everywhere. I've got my four-door file cabinet, and it's got its thousands of files in there.
Right.
So what you're suggesting then is we want to find specific types of documents and
you know, Daniel, I got to tell you a funny story. Okay. One of my friends is Italian, and she called me up one day, and she goes, you've known my mother all your life. And I said, yeah, I love your mother. And she goes, well, she's getting dementia, and we can't find her living trust or her insurance papers.
Okay.
And I said, okay. She says, look, she likes you. Will you come over and try to find them? And I said, sure.
Help us out on this one, huh?
I took her some biscotti because I had a friend that made biscotti, and I went over and I said, hey, how are you doing? I brought you some biscotti. And she goes, oh, good, I'll put the coffee on. And I said, so, where's your living trust? And she says, in the sewing closet.
In the sewing closet. That's a good one. We all think about looking there for it, huh?
We talked a little bit longer, and her daughter went and looked, and in the sewing closet under a pile of material was the living trust. I said, okay, so what have you been doing? And she goes, oh, I've been working in the garden. And I said, so, where do you keep your insurance papers? Oh, those are in the laundry room over there in the cupboard in the back. And I said, so why do you do that? And she goes, oh, you never know. You just think that somebody might come in and steal things.
Mm-hmm.
And so she hides them in every place in the house.
Okay, so it sounds like locating the documents is easier said than done.
Well, it can be a challenge, but you know, most people do have their piles of stuff, and once they get started, they remember where they've put certain things. It's just getting them all in one place.
Right.
We don't want to have to do that in an emergency.
Right, because then you have more important things to do.
Yep.
Okay, so we're talking about locating our documents. You know, I'm looking through your book here, and you have some checklists and what have you. I mean, I can think we can all say, okay, well, there's certain things we know we need, you know, like our life insurance policies and our auto insurance and the house insurance. Are there any other things that would be maybe abnormal that we wouldn't generally think of that could be crucial to have on hand?
Well, I try to keep it simple. 6 folders in one file. So your first file is going to be emergency detail. 2nd is personal information. 3rd is legal information. 4th is insurance policies. 5th is real estate. And 6th is investments. Now, in each of those areas, you're going to need personal information, your birth certificates, the birth certificates for every member of the family, social security cards, copies of everyone's driver's license. Then, like the legal information, power of attorney, medical power of attorney for health care. Insurance policies, every insurance policy that you have will go in that folder. Then the deeds of your property. You know, the people that were in Hurricane Katrina that went to the Superdome thought they were going home after that. When they got, when the whole hurricane was over, they had to be able to prove what property they owned. And some of them, all they had to do is they had to prove what piece of dirt they had. They didn't have the documentation of their property. Now, here in California, we call it one thing. You know, we call it our lot number or our parcel number. In other states, it may be called something else. But to have even just the parcel number of my home in my folder is valuable to me because it proves that at one point I own that property.
Okay, it gives you a frame of reference, so to speak, then,
absolutely,
I guess, to deal with and for future needs. Now, we've collected all these documents. You know, I know how I am sometimes. You know, I got my insurance policies for this, and I have multiple documents, and you know how most of them are like 95 pages thick, and they're full of legalese, you know. I mean, do we really know what's in these and how they're going to affect us and if we can use them or we can't use them, and how do we go about learning about this stuff?
Yeah, we usually don't know that, and we had a situation a year and a half ago. I used to teach school in Hawaii, and so I was over there visiting friends, and my sister called and said, "Mom's just been in a car accident." And I said, "Is she okay?" She says, "Well, they're taking her to the hospital." Turned out she had a broken pelvis. She survived. She got through it, but my sister had to locate the number of her insurance company for her car insurance and her medical insurance. So it all worked out great. I got home. Mom had to go into a rehab hospital for 15 days, and we knew, or for 14 days, and we knew that she had long-term health care. She couldn't walk. We knew she would need help. We knew that she had to be in the hospital for 5 days, and then we knew that she needed to be in a rehab hospital. We thought 14 was a good number, so at the end of 14 days, she came home. Her policy for long-term health care didn't kick in until 15 days. So we had no help. Now, what I encourage people to do is take their policies and sit down and read through them, and with a 3x5 card, write down all the details of what your policy contains and staple it to the front of your policy.
Okay, that's just a quick synopsis of what it is,
sure,
then, so you don't have to reread through it all.
Okay.
If there's anything that's confusing, would you recommend go find that insurance agent that sold you the policy and what have you, and have them clarify
absolutely
it?
Absolutely. Call that person up. They're getting paid money to serve you.
Right.
And so call the insurance agent and say, "Would you please explain in English what this does?" Write it on your 3x5 card, staple it to the cover of your policy, and then you will know what it does and any of your family member in case they need to access that information.
Well, that makes sense. So, in other words, put the man to work that you're paying anyway, right?
Sure.
Okay. Now, another thing comes up. Okay, so we've tracked down all these policies, all these documents, all these pieces of paper, and you recommend that we're going to isolate them, so to speak, in a specific place so that way we can have readily access to them, right?
Right.
Now, would you recommend having more than one copy or putting them in more than one place or what?
Yes. This, and I say this at my workshop, this is where it's a little gray area, and you have to decide what your comfort level is. I personally have all of my original documents in their folders, in one file, in a fireproof box. But then I've gone ahead and I've scanned them on my computer and loaded them onto a 2 GB flash drive that's password protected.
Mm-hmm.
Then I made a copy of that flash drive and sent it to my daughter in Texas.
Okay, so somewhere there's another copy.
Pardon?
Somewhere there's another copy.
Yes, sir. And I've done this because in my life, I travel a lot. I keep the 2 GB flash drive with me at all times. If it gets lost, people have to go through 2 passwords to get to the information, so I'm not really too worried about that.
Right.
If you have a small apartment, you may not, and you don't own a lot of material things, you may not want to go that route. You may want to put it on a CD or a flash drive or just keep it in a fireproof box, but have it accessible so that if your house is on fire or the apartment complex is on fire, you can get out of there really quickly and be able to prove who you are and what you own.
Right. Now, you know, I know that depending on the nature of the document and the agency you're working with, they demand and they want all sorts of different proof of content, you know, the legal ramifications, you know.
Right.
A lot of people want the original, or if you have digital copies or other hard copies, you know, would you recommend going and, you know, notarizing everything, or some things are okay not to and some things you need to, or what?
Well, that's another little bit of gray area also. If you have a copy of your passport, and like I have it on my flash drive, I can pull it up on any computer and prove that at one point I had that passport and it has my passport number on it. If I have a document that shows my property, the document number is valuable.
Okay.
So a lot of those things, even with your Social Security card, you can go to the Social Security Department and you can show them your Social Security card and your driver's license with your picture on it in a copy document, and they'll have to do some research, but at least you've got all of that together and you can show them different levels of documentation, and that's at least the beginning.
Okay, so still what you're saying then, at the worst case scenario, is at least as long as you have some copies that you can use to build off of and continue with.
Let me give you one more example. I lived in a wonderful neighborhood for 16 years, and one morning at 4 o'clock in the morning, the house, two houses across the street caught on fire. The gas main somehow ignited.
Mm-hmm.
Both houses burned to the ground. Thankfully, one of the young boys in the house was awakened by the smoke and got everybody out, got the neighbor with her dog and her cat out, and she was disabled, and got her out in the street, got everybody out in the street. They were standing there in their pajamas and their slippers, and both homes burned to the ground. Now, they had nothing but what they were wearing. Later, the elderly lady told me that she wished that she had put her life in a box, number one, but then also built the getaway bag, which I encourage everybody to do, because that's a 24-hour, 48-hour survival bag, because she could have put her medication in there.
Mm-hmm.
And she didn't. She also said that she could have taken pictures with her digital camera of all of her furniture and had that in her getaway bag. And it took those families a year and a half to completely rebuild their lives and rebuild their homes.
So had they been proactive prior to that and did everything you recommend, it would have taken a lot less than a year and a half, right?
Oh, yeah, because they had to go down to every organization, every government organization, every city organization, city office, and completely rebuild their lives from the ground up. And that's why I encourage people to build a getaway bag for every single member of the family, including your children and your pets. Because that way, like with the fires that we had in San Diego in September, every news article that I read, the people said, I only had 5 minutes to leave my home.
Mm-hmm.
And all I took was a couple of family photo albums and a couple of documents in my purse. If you have a bag available for every member of the family, you can grab it and leave. And then in case of any emergency, you've got your stuff there. You can put a copy of your documents in the bag. If you have a small estate, you know, if you live in an apartment, store your files in your getaway bag. Stick it under your bed or in a closet. And then on your way out of the house, you can grab it and run.
That makes sense. And, you know, you mentioned something that just a long time ago we didn't hear about it, and we're talking about children. You know, just from the last few years, there's more mainstream education coming and bringing children into the process, at least preparing for them.
Right.
Some of us tend to forget kids are actually humans, you know, depending on their age. And, you know, they're not intentionally left out of the process, but
well,
they're still
left out. Well, I had times during my children's lives I didn't think they were human. You know?
Yeah, I know. Especially those teen years, right? But, you know, when we look at children in their planning process, my opinion is I want to involve them in the planning process to help relieve any stress or apprehension or anxiety they might have when they have to deal with it.
Absolutely.
So speaking of children, and let's go with the documents, you know. You already mentioned your birth certificate as well, but is there anything that we could give the kids to do that would give them some ownership or buy-in on the whole process as far as
Absolutely.
Your documents?
In fact, I just spoke with a mother's group. They were called MOPS, Mothers of Preschoolers,
mm-hmm.
last week. And those are the people I love to get right away because they're just starting their family. They're just establishing priorities and habits within the family. And I said, get a calendar, put it on the wall, and every 3 months put on there, change your getaway bag.
Mm-hmm.
And have everybody in the family has a getaway bag. If you've got a child that can walk, let them have a little rolling backpack. And older kids, you know, I suggest rolling backpacks for everybody, including grandma, you know, and the dog.
Right. It makes them easier to transport, right?
Right. And then everybody is responsible for their bag. And there are some people that can't afford to go buy a rolling bag for their children, so get a pillowcase and let the kids color the pillowcase with felt tip markers. You put clothing in it, shoes. You put a toothbrush and a little thing of, you know, travel toothpaste in a Ziploc bag. You put any medication in there, combs, brushes, whatever the kids need that will fit in their bag, and then they will be responsible for it. It goes in a place where they choose, and then you have a drill. Okay, everybody, today we're going to drill. We're going to pretend that we have to leave the house quickly. We're going to set the alarm. Mom's going to set the alarm, and you're not going to know when it goes off. As soon as you hear the bell, get your bag and meet me outside. And then they do it.
Well, that makes sense.
And then that way,
there's
no fear. You know, you don't want to scare your kids to death. And you want them to be a part of this. And then, you know, the greatest thing is when there is a disaster or an emergency, Mom is not the one going around the whole house, grabbing everybody's bag, and lugging it out to the car. Everyone's responsible.
That makes sense. Now, so we've discussed several things so far about the type of documents we need, who needs to do what, where they should be stored or could be stored, and the why. You know, now we know there's always two sides to every coin, you know.
Sure.
And we've already sort of touched on the price of procrastination about your friends who had their home burned down and it took them so long to rebuild their lives. So that's one of the worst case scenarios. You know, failing to have these type of documents handy is really just going to slow the process down a lot.
You know, there's actually a National Procrastination Week.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's the second week of March. So there are a lot of people that procrastinate.
It's not quite, but almost a national holiday?
Yeah, for the whole second week of March.
Now, there's got to be other reasons why we might want to need these. You know, even though we're primarily focusing on this as disaster awareness or emergency preparedness,
sure.
Is there any other reason or, you know, not
sure.
A major hurricane or earthquake notwithstanding that we might need these documents?
Yes, and I'll tell you a couple of stories. One, there was a gentleman that I heard about that went to New York City for a job interview. And in the morning, he was a little nervous, so he decided to go jogging. So all he did is he put his hotel key in his pocket, and he went jogging through Central Park. Well, halfway through the jogging, he had a heart attack, and he died.
Ooh.
They found him, but there was no ID on him at all. He had absolutely no ID. He didn't have his cell phone. All he had was a hotel key, and it took 2 days for them to figure out who he was and locate his family. Now, that's extreme, but I tell anybody who travels, take ID with you, make sure that it's with you and on you at all times, and take some kind of documentation so that if something does happen to your home while you're gone, you know you can prove who you are and what you own. In another situation, some of my friends were sitting at home one evening and in a very lovely neighborhood, and at 8 o'clock at night, there was a knock on their door, and they went to the door. Now, you have to realize this is a normal family environment.
Okay.
They answered the door, and it was the police. And the policeman said, You have 5 minutes to leave your home. One of your neighbors has decided to commit suicide, and he's turned on all the gas in his house, and he's going to light his match. They looked at each other and thought, we are not in a dangerous area of town or in a dangerous town.
Mm-hmm.
This was just a neighbor who had, you know, reached the end of his rope and had had it. And so they were trying to talk him out of it. But in the meantime, they figured out that if he lit the match, it would take out at least 20 homes around his house.
So, being proactive, get the people out of there.
Here's a young family with young children. They packed everyone up, and at the last minute, as they were loading the car, the dad ran back in and took the computer and realized that all of their information was on their computer, and so he took the tower from his computer and threw it in the car. Now, thankfully, 2 hours later, they were able to come home, and the gentleman decided not to blow up the house, and yet that was just in a normal environment. That was just in a normal neighborhood. So we have to realize that we are, you know, we want to think that we have control over our lives, but we really don't. The most control that we have over our lives is over what's in our homes and what we have in our wallets or purses and in our brains to protect ourselves in case of any emergency or disaster. If there's a car accident, everybody needs to have documentation on them, in their pockets, have an emergency card of who to contact. Because, like my mom, hey, she was 80 years old, she ran a red light, and it was an accident. She got hit in the passenger, in the driver's side of her car, and thankfully no one was killed, but both cars were totaled. She had an emergency card in her wallet, and they were able to call my sister, and my sister was able to call me. Never go anywhere without identification. Never go on a trip without having proof of who you are. And like I say, I take a 2-gig flash drive with me everywhere I go, so that no matter what happens, no matter where I am, I can prove who I am and what I own.
And that 2-gig flash drive concept, you know, that's something I do too. I did this years ago because of my military background. I travel around, and you never know what documents they're going to want. And I got tired of carrying this small suitcase full of documents, which I was
actually
doing for some time. You know?
Yeah, actually, I went around my house with my digital camera and took pictures of all my furniture.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And one of my friends says, well, I'm taking pictures of all my shoes because they're valuable.
They're the most valuable thing.
Whatever.
Hey, well, you know, everybody has their own thing, right?
That's right.
Okay, so we've discussed several things here about why we need to have documents, some upsides and some downsides. You know, the biggest upside to the whole thing is you're going to be able to prove who you are, what you're owning, be able to track down and locate policies and get people moving faster to assist you as opposed to them dragging around because they don't have documents. Would that be
right.
A good assessment?
Right. And, you know, in my life in a box, what I've tried to do is, it's taken 9 years to put all of this together, is find a simple way for people to go through with one box, locate all their documents, and I give a checklist of every single thing you could possibly find,
mm-hmm.
and then just do it. Then, also, in case something happens and you die, your family has all of your wants and wishes on 3 forms that I've put in the book, and that's, you know, that's something we hate to talk about.
Well, that's true, I agree, but it's got to be done. It's being proactive, and it's being responsible for the survivors.
Yep, and you fill out 3 forms. You know, that was what really motivated me, is when, that was about 11 years ago, my grandfather got sick, and my dad called me up, and he says, we need to plan Grandpa's funeral, because they're giving him maybe 2 or 3 days to live. And so we met with the funeral director, and we put together all of the details for a memorial service and all that. And then Dad said, you know, this kind of stinks. This is not fun. Why don't we do this for Mom and me? And so the funeral director was thrilled, because he got to plan 3 funerals, you know, right there.
Why not? I'd be happy to, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah, pre-need information. We did that, and Grandpa didn't die. It was amazing. He lived to be 94 years old, and a year and a half later, my dad had a cholesterol clot go to his heart, and he dropped dead, and we were absolutely stunned. First of all, that my dad died without asking permission. I mean, he just went quickly. But we had everything in place. We had all of the stuff written out. Everything was planned. And the irony was, my grandfather was at my dad's funeral. But because of that pre-need information, we wrote everything down. We had it all in place. And those three documents are in my life in a box. And, you know, one lady in one of my workshops says, "You are not going to get me to fill that out." And I said, "Great. Then on the front of that form, called My Details, I want you to write, 'You figure it out, there's money in the bank.'" You know? And she laughed and she says, "Well, that's kind of unfair to my kids if I make them make all the decisions." And I said, "Sure, so write something down. Otherwise, just let them know that they can do whatever they want and they can spend your money on it, but they're going to have to figure that out." And that's a tough place to be.
Yes, it is. But like you said, it's the whole being preemptive there, being proactive and going out there and doing the tough job now so that we don't have to do it later, or so someone else doesn't have to do it for us, because whatever they do might not be what we really want to have happen. So we need to be involved in that process prior to the fact as opposed to during or after the fact.
Absolutely.
So if any of the people who are listening to this would like to purchase your book or your books or contact you about your seminars or your other programs, how would they go about doing that?
I have a great website. It's very simple. It's called mylifeinabox.com. It has all of my contact information. It's easy to get to, and I would love to be available for them for workshops or speaking, or they can just purchase my book in a paperback book from the website, or they can download it as an ebook in both English and Spanish. And I think that they'll get a lot of information. Also, I do a monthly newsletter, and it's free. And when you sign up for my newsletter, you get my free 4-month emergency planning calendar, and that helps you start setting up an emergency kit for your home.
Okay.
And the newsletter's a lot of fun. I do it once a month, and you can also read previous issues from my website. And that's mylifeinabox.com.
So there's more information for people who would like to expand on this, and I'm sure several people would, you know, once they recognize the need and decide to do that unprocrastination thing. They can go out to your website, mylifeinabox.com, and all of the contact information and your material and what have you is on that website for them to download and use as they need, right?
Right.
All right, Lori. You know, I thank you very much for spending your time. I know you're a busy person. And I'm quite sure that my audience thanks you also. So again, folks, if you need any additional information on preparing your documents in the emergency disaster setting, you're going to go to Lori's website, mylifeinabox.com. She has valuable information for you. And it's quite possible you could get her online to come do a seminar or some training for you or your group of people. So this is Daniel at emergencyactionplanning.com, and this concludes our interview with Lori Long on document preparation in the disaster setting.
Thanks, Daniel.
Thank you very much, Lori.